Good morning from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. Welcome to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm your host and garden expert, Teresa Watkins. I almost went back in for a big jacket this morning. Good morning, Lizzie. How are you?
I actually put long sleeves on, and anybody that knows me knows that I can't stand bulk. I can't stand long sleeves. Absolutely hate jeans. But yeah, I actually put a long sleeve shirt on. Ridiculous.
It is cold out there. Jim up in Newberry gave me a heads up that they had a temperatures Thursday in the 20s. He had a low of 26 degrees and said that his neighbor Bob recorded 24. And then I think it's Wednesday or Thursday. And then this morning he got down to 27. So if you're in North Florida, you're in the 20s this morning. And then Sumter County, Marion County, you're in the 30s below freezing.
Let me tell you, I know that I look ridiculous if people could actually see on our property, because it was, what, Tuesday, and it was like 70-something degrees. And I'm out here walking around with the frost blankets covering all my plants up. And I'm like, these people think I'm an idiot, I swear. But then sure enough, it ended up getting down 37 degrees, I think it was Wednesday. And then, of course, it was hot yesterday. I had shorts and everything on, tank top.
It is just schizophrenic here in Florida. You know, the temperatures were cold in the morning, and then by the afternoon, and it's going to be in the 80s on Wednesday.
I am so excited.
I'm not. I like the cold weather. I just, you know, look better in sweaters than bikinis. So, you know, it's...
Don't we all, girl? Don't we all?
And so I love to, I love the cold temperatures. It makes it feel so good to get out gardening. And so if you do, if you did get below freezing today, I don't think it's going to do very much damage because it's not going to last that long.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this is going to help the citrus industry, you know, the citrus get a little bit sweeter. And mm-hmm. And Jim was telling me that he donated over 60 grocery bags of citrus. That's how much citrus he got off of his fruit tree.
God bless him. Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just wonderful to see citrus coming back that well. And I, in my driving around Central Florida, a lot of groves are, you know, repopulating their, they're replanting their citrus trees.
Good.
So if you have a gardening question, this is the morning, this is the day you get to ask them. We're going to be taking calls through 9 a.m. You can hear us every Saturday morning, Better Lawns and Gardens, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. And our phone number, and you'll want to call like at 7:30, we have the wonderful Tom McCubbin. He's going to be on this morning with us and talk about what he is seeing with pesticides, or not pesticides, but herbicides. We're going to talk a little bit about herbicides this morning and the changes that are coming to, you know, herbicide labels. So he's going to be talking about that. And then in our second hour, we are going to be talking to Bill Stengel, and we're going to be talking about pest issues and what you can do for those. And even here in Florida, during the wintertime, we still have pest issues because of the 80 degrees. We don't stay long enough, cold enough to really do a lot of damage to our really landscape pest issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you know, something we do have solutions, and we have responsible solutions.
And I know that they're a sponsor, but I don't get a discount, which I'm not complaining. But what I'm saying is I went out and bought this product just because of hearing how well it's done, and out of my own cognizance, my own cash, my own money. And I'm willing to stand by it and say that the Summit Responsible Solutions, off the chain good.
Yes, they are.
They are.
And it doesn't hurt the environment. And so, you know, when we talk about these chemicals, that, you know, it's basically overuse. When we talk about anything wrong in the landscape, it's basically overuse or underuse. And overuse of water, overuse of chemicals, when we don't need to, overuse of fertilizers, when we don't need to. So we want to be good stewards this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and you know what? That's going to save us money in the landscape. It doesn't have to be expensive.
That's what people don't understand, is that, you know, you can, my thing is that I looked at the price of the bag, and I thought it was very reasonably priced, but, you know, some people might think it was a little expensive for the bag that I bought. But let me tell you something, I didn't have my mosquito problem like I've had every year. So, and it was worth it. And it's still continuing to work.
That's it. That's it. I appreciate that. We're going to talk about what to do in January. We still got a couple more weeks. What can we be planting? What can you, plant for food? It's still a very, I don't want to say popular, but it's becoming a more serious request. Look for, how can I grow my own food? And so, we can grow here in Florida. We're very blessed that we can grow vegetables and herbs every month out of the year. And we don't have to be going through a food desert. So you can grow your own food, and it's easy to do. You don't have to have a lot of problems. 1-888-455-2967. And you can get on the board and ask your gardening questions at the bottom of the hour. And then into the second hour at 8 o'clock, 8 to 9 o'clock, we will be taking your gardening questions. Or you can text me at 23680, and we will respond to your questions. You can also go to betterlawns.com and listen to the show or hear our podcast. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, every show is uploaded, and you can hear it at a time that's more convenient to you during your exercising or during your morning walks. And you don't need to miss an episode. So we are going to be back with the host emeritus of Bear Lawns and Gardens, Mr. Tom McCubbin. And we're going to be back from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. I am Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. Tom McCubbin was with Better Lawns and Gardens for 34 years. He's taking his retirement and enjoying it. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Good morning, Teresa. It's chilly out there.
It is cold. It's going to get worse tomorrow morning. It sure is. And you really haven't retired. You're still working hard. How's everything going in your garden?
Everything's growing well, not the best. Well, some things are growing well, like broccoli and cauliflower. Onions look pretty good. Tomatoes about gone. So I'm really kind of cleaning up the garden right now, getting it ready for spring. I'm thinking spring, actually. I'll be getting it ready, cleaning it out, get some of the weeds out, things like that.
That's good to do, and you're not going to really sweat too much in this cold temperature.
That's right. Only thing is, I wish it wasn't so cool so I could wear my shorts more, but it's a little chilly out there.
It does with the shorts. So Howie Peterson said to say hi. He's homesick today, definitely wanted me to tell you hi. So, Tom, I want to talk to you today because you mentioned last week that the market has changed with the labeling on herbicides. And so talk to us about, chemicals in the landscape.
Well, the thing about chemicals in the landscape, I use them when I need to. I think that's the important thing to keep in mind. And you have to remember that the label is the law on it, so you have to be careful. And, I see people out there doing stupid things. They don't read the label. I've seen people out there in flip-flops applying herbicides to their lawn, spraying insecticides. One time there was a neighbor of mine. He was applying something to his vegetables. He said he saw me with something in a green bottle, so he bought something in a green bottle. And it was wrong product. He was actually affecting the vegetables. So,
oh no!
Yeah, I know. We need to read the label because we do have choices. We don't have to use products if we don't want to. But when it gets down to some of the pests that we have, we almost need to, or otherwise we don't grow the crops. So that's the other thing.
Right. And integrated pest management, or it's called IPM, it's something that you use the least harshest chemical first or process or method first, and then you go up. And then sometimes you just definitely at the very last, you have to use something to solve the problem.
Yeah, I use a lot of the year-round spray oil, for instance, and soap products, neem oil, things of that nature. But when I have to, I will go to something stronger, especially when it comes to weed control.
Of course, of course. So there's some changes you noticed last week when you were out. And so what's happening to herbicides on the market right now? What's the latest on Roundup?
I know. I noticed this, well, I was forewarned about 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, that products like Roundup, for instance, as we know it, would be leaving the market. So I've been looking, and when I went to the garden centers, I guess last week, I noticed that Roundup had changed the formula. You probably wouldn't know it. There's some old Roundup there with the glyphosate in it still, but the newer Roundup product, if you look at the label, it will say exclusive formula. And in it contains triclopyr, which is an old herbicide.
Yeah.
Also, we have Fusiflop, which many know is Fusilade 2, and Diquat. So they've changed the product. The label is about the same as far as usage, however. And most companies have something similar to this. You're just going to see the glyphosate going off the market for the homeowner.
Okay. And so how does that change residential use? What does that mean in the landscape?
Probably doesn't mean a whole lot to the average homeowner, because they're going to say, well, you know, I just want something to kill the weeds.
Yeah.
And if this product will do it, it's fine. There are alternatives out there to it. And one that I've liked for a long time, it's been on the market, also sounds like glyphosate, but it's glufosinate. And that is, Finale is another name for it, mm-hmm. And it's in the BioAdvance weed and grass killer. The BioAdvance people dropped the glyphosate a long time ago, and so it's out, but it looks like it's only at certain garden centers, so you have to look for it. But the neat thing about this one, Teresa, is it controls the artillery fern. You know, the little ferny-like thing that grows in pots and in the landscape?
And it grows on stairs.
It grows about anywhere. And glyphosate, which has been the active ingredient in Roundup, won't do that, won't take it out totally. But the glyphosinate, the Finale, and the Bayer, in the BioAdvance product will. Takes it a while, takes it about a month, but it will get it under control.
Well, that's really important that you said that. I'm glad you brought that up. It takes a month. So, you know, people like to see instant results. We're not patient anymore. And so when they, you know, you're talking about the label and taking a month, how long should people wait before they think they need to reapply something?
Yeah, well, the situation with some of these products, like the Roundup, and Spectracide has one also, which is similar now, and so do other companies, is that they knew that people wanted to see some instant results. So besides the main chemical in there, they would put something secondary, like they put Diquat in, and Diquat would start to brown up the leaves within a day. But in general, for the whole product to really work and do its job, it takes a week to 2 weeks on most of these products, and sometimes a month.
Okay, and that really where the weather really does affect a chemical usage is that it could take longer because it's colder.
Yeah, and read the label again. I saw somebody out the other day, and the temperature was down well around the 40s, low 40s, and they were applying herbicides, and I was thinking to myself, you know, you're not going to see any effect out of that, or you're going to see very little effect, because the active range is somewhere between 60 and 85, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. So you just read the label and find out when you can apply some of these things. The label's a law, basically.
Label's a law. And so can homeowners still get glyphosate?
It is out there. I've been to several garden centers, and it looks like they're changing it out gradually. They're using up old stock. It's not illegal to sell it. It's not a banned product. It's very questionable whether it really causes the cancer even that people claim it does, and whether it's the active ingredient or is it the surfactant that's doing it. So big debate there. So it's still legal. It's still available. You can go up online and get it shipped to your home. And some of the garden centers still have it, but it looks like to me it's going to be changed out and new formulas are going to be on the market of different products.
Can we use it in the Asiatic jasmine and it won't hurt the jasmine, but it will take care of the weed?
You know, there's no labeling for that. The university has done some studies with just plain glyphosate, You got to be careful. If you see the label, some of it has Diquat in it, may have something else in it. And if you use the multi-herbicide product, you're going to knock the Asiatic jasmine out. Mm-hmm. But I will give you an example. My wife has tried to kill out Asiatic jasmine with glyphosate 3 times. All times, the Asiatic jasmine looked mighty nice. But there's no label for it. So what I tell people if you want to give it a try, just figure out you're killing out the Asiatic jasmine and be surprised when the Asiatic jasmine survives and the weeds die. So, but you have to follow the label again. You know, if you're going against the label, you can use the label to say, well, I'm going to kill everything out.
Yeah, and that's just very important. Okay, so weeds, what is the best way to control weeds in the landscape?
Pull them out. Dig them out.
Yeah, that's hand labor.
Hand labor. But I use the Roundup type products, and you just have to do them as it tells you on the label. Now, there are some other natural things out there, some alternatives. There's a vinegar product out there. It's a 20% vinegar. It has to be fairly strong. Store vinegar will do some things, but store vinegar is strongest I see is about 5%. There's some soap products out there available. I even saw a chloride product on the market. So
wow.
There are a number of alternatives, but if you want something fairly safe, vinegar, but you got to be careful because it's a strong vinegar, or one of the soap products would be something you could use. Otherwise, I'm going to be out there, and I will. I've been using them for years, the glyphosate and also the glufosinate, the Finale-type products.
The Finale, and that's good. And they're kind of expensive.
Yeah, it can be expensive. The homeowner line, if you can get it, is in a container, has been about $20-$25. If you go up and get the commercial line product, you're going to be paying a couple of $100, but you're getting a lot more.
Right. So if someone has a landscaping company taking care of their yard, what should they be aware of if just someone coming in and spraying? What kind of questions should they ask their landscaping company?
Well, if you're concerned about any of these herbicides, just tell them that you don't want any of the ones that are questionable. And, you go with the natural products, the soap product, the vinegars. The problem is they only kill back the tops. They don't get to the roots of the system.
And it'll rebound.
And I think the main thing is you just want to make sure that they're only treating the weeds that they need to control. That's the main thing.
Do you find it that it's kind of lazy to use, a herbicide as an edger, and then it, eventually affects the shrubs and plants? We see the damage done months later. But should people be using the herbicide as an edger?
I don't like to use herbicides as edgers, and here's the reason. Not that they're going to hurt the plants necessarily, but what they do is they get the herbicide on the grass that's around the edge, and it kills the grass back into the lawn. And I have several commercial properties where the companies are doing that, and the bed gets bigger and bigger and bigger because they're killing the good grass out gradually. Mm-hmm. And so that's the problem. But if the product's being used properly, and that's the problem, a lot of people who are applying it have not had the training, and then you might get damage to the plant materials.
There you go. Tom, thank you so much for coming on today. It's so good to talk to you. Give Jody and Melanie our best.
Okay, it's my pleasure, and Tony and Lizzie also, thank you for having me. Have a great day.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye, Tom. Bye. I love him.
Oh, I know. let me tell you what. I know our listeners love him, too. He's just, the two of you mesh so well together, so
he's
good
awesome.
Job.
Well, I could listen to him all day long. So I was in a meeting this week, and someone said, I know that voice. And they heard me, and they came over, and they go, I listen to you all the time on the radio. And it was so nice to meet someone who listens to the show, has been listening since Tom, mm-hmm. all the way back when Tom first began. So I love doing that. So we do have a wonderful event this week, and it is the Orlando Garden Club's Love Our Green Florida Standard Flower Show. It is an incredible show to go to. They have wonderful displays, and it is going to be at the Orlando Garden Club from 10 a.m., to 4 p.m. today. It's at 710 East Rollins Street in the Lock Haven Park next to the Science Center. Free parking, and it's free to come visit the show and take the kids. They will love seeing it. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, if it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. And I'm Teresa Watkins. This is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I want to just say a special appreciation for Tom McCubbin calling in and explaining the facts on the new herbicide changes.
Yes.
And just to be aware, the label is the law. Read the label. That's where the instructions are. And it'll tell you exactly how much to use.
Yeah. You know, that's the bad part about being in America is the fact that it's go big or go home on everything from eating to cleaning to whatever. And, yeah, if we don't do it extra, then it's not going to work out better. But, yeah,
and they want to make it. They want to make it, you know, work now.
Correct.
And so I just find that funny that they have to add a burn agent to to the chemical because then people will know it worked. And so I just, it's interesting. Okay. People are interesting. So Brenda Nakowi, Lizzie, she sent a perfect text message.
Okay.
She said her name and her location.
Ooh.
And that's the important part, and her gardening question. So Brenda, thank you so much for listening to Better Lawns and Gardens and for texting. She says, is there anything I can do for a hibiscus plant, which is turning yellow, since I assume it's too early to fertilize? Well, plants turn yellow for a number of different reasons. It's called chlorosis, and we got to figure out why it's turning yellow. So hibiscus really like to have a lot of water. And when I say a lot of water, they need water at least once a week, a good soaking. And we've had that this week. So I don't necessarily think it's the watering, or they can turn yellow because they do need fertilizer or nutrients. And but I don't think it's that right now either. So it may be the cold weather that we've experienced some of these, you know, different days that we've had frosts and colder temperatures. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So colder temperatures and it'll turn yellow. So Brenda, if you don't have irrigation and the plant is in full sun, check the soil. It may be too dry. In your area, you may not have gotten enough rain. And I know that certain areas haven't gotten enough. And so you can check that. And then just wait to fertilize it in the springtime. And that'll be fine. You don't necessarily want to boost hibiscus growth right now because we are going to get some freezes. And that new growth is going to be really more susceptible to freeze damage. So check out the root system, Brenda. See what's going on there. And you can let me know. I would be interested in finding out.
Yeah.
So that's a really good observation. The leaves are turning yellow. What's going on? And sometimes in some plants, it's just, okay, it's my time to go, and I'm just going to turn yellow and drop off. And if yellow leaves really bother you, mm-hmm. just pull them off.
Yeah. Right.
Then you don't have to look at them.
Ooh, teacher, I have a question for
yes.
you. All right. So I just bought some, I find, extremely gorgeous midnight purple, even though the picture I sent to you wasn't really midnight color, but tulips. And we talked about it on Good Morning Orlando yesterday. And they came in a pot and they're gorgeous. And then we had this little bit of cold weather. And I would like to plant them in the ground sometime, but I don't know what to do with the tulips. If I should do it now, will it send them into shock? Will the cold weather get it? Will it be a double zapparoo? What?
They were gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. And I would have bought them too.
Mm-hmm.
But they are even more, a shorter lifespan than an annual. They're kind of like a week to 2 week plant, bi-weekly plant.
Are you kidding me?
No.
You know how much I spent on those?
They're not going to last long. And it's the sad part is that once they're blooming and they're at their peak,
mm-hmm.
it's all down the hill from there. Okay, so they're not going to last long. So the compost pile is where it needs to go.
No. I kept my receipt, so I will be taking it back.
That you can do that. And yeah, that's one of the things. But, you know, you just buy tulips just for either an event or just to say that you have them, growing them, but they're not something you can put in the ground.
It's one of those things like you see, like I see pictures in like New England and they come up through the snow and they're gorgeous and beautiful. They don't stay like that forever.
No, it's called zone envy.
It is.
I suffer from it.
I'm telling you what, every time that my New England family up in Maine and they post the pictures of their flower boxes and stuff, I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Biscuits.
Yeah, but we don't have to shovel sunshine here.
Good point. Thank you for reminding me. Yes.
That's wonderful. So I got another text message that said, okay, how do I get rid of coral ardesia? University of Florida IFAS says its most effective control of this plant can be achieved through herbicide application. Yes. But if you, it depends on where it is in on your landscape. If you have a wooded area, what I would do is just keep cutting it down so that it doesn't go to seed or go to berries, fruit that will, you know, continue to continue to propagate coral ardesia. Okay, so cut the flowers off. Don't let it go to fruiting, and then pull them out. That's the best way to get rid of them. You can spray an herbicide on them, glyphosate or the Finale on them, and you know, it's definitely important to get rid of coral ardesia. It's invading our conservation areas and will take over your landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And I know several parks in Seminole County that have it. And it's just once it gets a hold in the area, it's not maintained often. So we're talking about woods and treed areas that don't see a lot of maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And then it can just sprout all over. And it looks pretty, but it's spread by birds. So it's something that you're going to have to keep looking for and just don't let it get out of hand. So that's a great question. So someone else texted that they're in Mount Dora. We'll call them nameless. Will my foxtail palm be okay in this cold? Should I cover it? Well, how tall is your foxtail palm? If it's, you know, 15, 20 feet tall, it should be okay. It may get some brown leaves on it. So you know, foxtail palms are susceptible to cold temperatures. I don't think it's going to be that cold that long this week. So I think it'll be okay. But definitely if you're worried about it, especially in Mount Dora, if you're in Marion County, Sumter County, cover your Phoenix Robelinis, your pygmy date palms, your queen palms. You're going to see a little bit of frond damage. It's not going to die, but you're going to see frond damage.
Okay. And I got some blueberry bushes.
And blackberries.
Blackberry, not blueberry. Blackberry and grapes.
Yes, I'm so impressed.
Yeah, I come for $5 a piece.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Maybe that was too much, but no, for me, it wasn't. That's great.
That's a great price.
So should I plant them? Because I know how to plant them, but should I plant them now or wait until we get to maybe... It's not going to freeze?
No, no, I'd plant them now.
Okay.
They can handle the freezes. Just stick them in the ground, give them, you know, some water or plant them right before we're going to get another cold front through mm-hmm. where it gets a rain. And they will be just fine. Now, they're going to go dormant, so they don't have a lot of leaves on them.
Right.
But, you know, go ahead and plant them. They're not going to be shocked
okay.
by the weather. So good choice. Blackberries are delicious.
I know. And if I could find me some muscadines.
And
I'm actually allergic to the shell on the outside, but I don't
really?
Care. I pop them in my mouth and I bust them open and pull the peel out real quick. I don't, it's weird. My body's weird. I'm finding, I mean, even as a kid, I was allergic, but I don't know if it's the acid on the outside of the peel.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, as long as I don't eat the peel, then my mouth doesn't start burning.
Shrek could peel the grapes for you.
Yeah, I'm sure he, along with our trucking company, he's going to get right on to peeling me grapes.
That would be funny. Blackberries and grapes you can plant right now. That's not a problem.
Okay.
So anything you see on a discount shelf, even orchids and things that people were giving for Christmas, you know, any holiday plants, except for tulips, will be fine. We'll be fine. Go ahead and grab them if you can get them at a cheaper price. I love doing that because they're going to recover just fine. And so it'll be good. The orchids love this temperature change. And so a lot of orchids are blooming right now. So they love the, you know, 60 degree temperatures back up to the 80s. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, I'm Teresa Watkins. And this is Better Lawns and Gardens on Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. Do you have a gardening question that you need answers to? You can give me a call, Teresa Watkins, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. So Daniel Forehand has been very patient in getting an answer. He is from Pembroke Pines. And let me see. I've got his letter. I have his letter right here. He says, Teresa, attached photos of a staghorn in South Florida, okay, and they live in Pembroke Pines. We're concerned that a plastic-coated steel cable originally used to attach to the bottle brush tree, is working its way through the staghorn as it has grown quite large over the past 30 years. He's been growing a staghorn fern for 30 years. That's great. We're trying to decide if we can raise the fern back up towards the tree without breaking it off from the attachment point. How flexible will the fern be if we slowly, over an hour, raise it with a wide strap using a ratchet so we could tie it back to the tree? It's going to be very forgiving, Daniel. Okay, so there are three parts to a staghorn. Are the antler fronds, and that's the sticky outer green portion that goes up and looks like reindeer antlers or horns. Then there's the shield fronds, and these are the flatter part of the staghorn that is brown, that looks like, you know, a backing that it's attached to. Okay, so those are, they start off green, but then they go to brown. Those are the shield fronds. And then there's the root ball on the inside. This is a time, if it's been growing for 30 years, if you wanted to divide it, you could easily divide it now, okay? But I would slowly ratchet it up if you want to, and it's going to break through any of the shield fronds that is covering that or surrounding the wires. But if you do it slowly, it should be just fine. All right, so no problem. Growing a staghorn fern for 30 years, that's beautiful. So I'm very good for that. So yeah, try it. Let me know how it handles. But it's also an opportunity for you to divide it up and start new ones or share with your friends and family. And so if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. Jean, let's talk to her. Where is she located? In Stuart, Florida. Good morning, Jean. How can I help you?
Good morning, Teresa. I was just wondering and looking outside. I have hanging plants and some potted plants on my porch. Should best to water? Should I water them good today? Because it's supposed to get down to about 49,
yeah,
50, something like that. So should I water them today or wait till it warms up a little bit tomorrow?
Okay, so when was the last time you watered them?
I don't know, about 2 days ago.
Okay, there's no reason to water them at all, Gene. Okay, they're going to be just fine. The 49 degrees is not going to hurt them. And just watering them once a week right now is basically all they should need.
Okay, now the orchids, you said a while back that they don't like 40-degree weather. Now, my question is below 50 or below 40 is what you're talking about.
Right. Well, it depends on the variety of orchids. Do you know what the variety of orchids that you have?
All sorts of them.
All sorts of them. Okay. So what I would do is, just to be careful, is I would protect them, move them closer to the house if they're in the patio area, cover them with a frost blanket just for today and tomorrow, and they should be just fine. But there's just really no need to water them.
Okay. But the temperature, to start thinking about covering them is below 50?
Yeah, I would, definitely. Below 50. Think about it. Think how protected they are. It's not going to be something that's going to kill them, but you could see a little bit of damage depending on the variety of orchid.
Okay.
Okay?
Very good. Thank you, ma'am.
Well, thank you for listening. You too. Thank you for calling. Richard from Tallahassee, how can I help you?
Morning, Teresa. How are you doing? It's cold up here today.
I bet. You have your long johns on, I bet.
Dadgum, you got that right.
How can I help you, Richard?
Okay, I got a couple questions real quick.
Okay.
Well, we bought our house in 2003, okay?
Okay.
And at the corner of my garage and my kitchen, I have three very big crepe myrtles.
Okay.
Okay, and which provide me a lot of shade because they face the east.
Okay.
Now, what my question is, I'm not a crepe murder guy. They do this all around my neighborhood. No, they look stupid.
Right.
But I mean, they are 35 feet tall. Okay. They're huge. Uh-huh. I don't know how old they are, but I want to trim them back some. Now, I'm going to have to get a cherry picker on one side and uh-huh. get on the roof on the other. How much and when would I do that?
Okay, so just as a general rule of thumb, when you're pruning, you can take off one-third of the plant. Okay, so when you're talking about the canopy, you can take one-third of the canopy off, one-third of the trunks, and or one-third of the root ball without a severe shock. You're going to see a little bit of shock on the root balls, but you know, one-third is a good rule of thumb. But
do I do it now?
You can do it now, especially when the crepe myrtles are deciduous and without leaves. It's a great time to look and see which ones you want to get rid of because there's no leaves there, and you can kind of see the structure of the branches. So now is a fine time to cut them, but I don't want you to hack them off at the top. I want you to take them back to the trunk and just take the branch off if you need to. And usually it's just good, you know, to take off, you know, branches that are smaller than your pinky. Okay, but if you've got larger ones than that and it's causing an issue with your house, you can definitely take those off any time of the year.
I don't even fertilize these trees because they're so old. And
They don't need it. They're going to take what they need.
They don't need it. Now, my other question, real quickly. I bought my wife a gardenia a year ago Christmas, which is planted. What and when do I fertilize?
Okay,
so help it out.
Okay, so you can fertilize it with an acidic fertilizer. Any fertilizer that's good for azaleas or gardenias will be fine. And then follow the label. And I would probably do it in March, towards the end of February, first part of March. Okay?
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Richard. Thank you so much for calling. Jim from Ocoee, how can I help you?
Good morning, Teresa. My question is, are plants affected by the wind chill factor, like people and animals are?
No, they are not.
Okay.
Okay, because they don't have a skin. Okay, so they have a different way of breathing, and the wind chill does not affect plants.
All right, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. That's a great question. So we don't have that. I'd like to say thank you to Tom McCubbin for coming on and helping us with the new herbicide labels. And you want to read the label. The label's the law. I always appreciate him coming on, and I enjoy him so much. And then also thank you to all our callers and text messages. If you didn't get your question answered, give us a second hour. We're going to be on till 9 o'clock.
Yeah, so give us a call around 8:30. That's a perfect time. It's on the 30s. You give us a call, then we can get you in for the next two segments.
That would be good because I know at 9:05. They're going to, I need to ask this question, and we won't be able to get it in on time.
However, you can still text us, because when I come in on Monday morning, I double-check the text line, and then I text the information to Teresa so she can ask that next Saturday.
That's great, and I really do appreciate that. So also, too, I want to give a big thank you to the Florida East Coast Bromeliad Society. I spoke to them on Sunday. It's a great organization, and if you need more information about it, they do have a wonderful Facebook page, the Florida East Coast Bromeliad Society, and I thank them for asking me to talk. I talked about bromeliads and love, bromance. There you go. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, if it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
Go to WFLAOrlando.com and check out our contest page. We're giving away really cool tickets to some special events here in Orlando, WFLAOrlando.com.